In reality television, the people are represented by two separate but equally obsessed attorneys. This is their podcast.
Hi, I'm Ceci.
And I'm Angela.
And this is the Bravo Docket.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Bravo Docket. We're going to dive right into our second part covering Faith Stowers' lawsuit against Bravo in the network and production. Let's get into it. So where we left off was going through the complaint, and now I think we're going to switch to things that cast members have said about the facts as they came out.
Thank you, Reddit user Twinkle Planet. There's audio that was saved. It's from the Bitch Bible, and it's Stassi and Kristen discussing the knife incident that Faith mentions in the complaint that we read in our last episode.
All right, let me try and play it.
Somebody asked seasons ago, Faith, she pulled a knife on Faith. I think it was like a butter knife at Sir. They were at Sir, and yes. It was like on that little sidebar.
Yeah.
I hate even saying that bitch's name. Not Lala, but the other one. So yeah. Let's call her the other one.
Voldemort.
Yes, Voldemort.
Yeah, we all. She almost sounds like, she sounds like Sheena.
I think as it sped up a little bit, and so it kind of has Sheena's inflection.
Oh, probably. Okay, so that's them admitting it.
I can't tell if they were there, but there were other things that happened that apparently the cast members have either discussed or have been reported. One of those being Brittany and Sheena calling Faith on the phone repeatedly to scream at her. Jack posted a bunch of accusations about Faith on social media, which we discussed in the last episode. And then apparently Sandoval went on the Pump Rules podcast and claimed that Faith was a thief.
All right. Well, then she has many, many employment claims here. So I thought it would be good to give a overview of what these are. You want to talk about the statute of limitations first?
Yeah, we discussed a little bit in the last episode about how this is past the 3-year statute of limitations. In 2020, California changed the law and increased the statute of limitations to 3 years. However, this is still beyond that. Ceci and I both think that it's going to be very difficult for her to survive a motion to dismiss based on that, even though she's claiming that she was tricked into signing an unconscionable contract that led her to believe that she couldn't bring those claims until it was too late. Because as we discussed, if she had taken the contract to an attorney beforehand, that's going to be the argument that she could have discovered this earlier. These are all beyond the statute of limitations of 3 years, all the incident. That's going to be a difficult one. Anything to add to that?
I agree.
Ceci's going to talk about the California statutes that this is filed under next. And one thing to remember is it's not against the law to be an asshole. If it was, a lot more people would be sued, even more than there is now. Under these employment laws that Ceci's going to talk about, you have to be discriminated against based on some sort of protected class. And so if your boss is just an asshole to everybody, and it doesn't matter what color they are, what religion they are, if they're male or female, if your boss is just terrible to everyone and makes horrible remarks to everyone, then that's not a claim you can bring. However, retaliation claims can have a lot of weight behind them. And Ceci's going to talk about that too, because that's when you are fired or terminated or demoted are subjected to a hostile work environment for reporting an issue. And there has to be a specific kind of issue.
Yeah. So that's what I was going to start with, was retaliation. And the basic legal definition in California is that your employer takes an adverse employment action against you or treats you in a discriminatory manner because you engaged in a protected activity. And so that's almost always the result of a whistleblower incident or a fear of one. And it's usually an effort to either frighten an employee into not reporting something or punish them for already having made that report. So it's things like something the employer might be trying to cover up, like workplace injuries, unsafe working environments, ongoing discrimination, sexual harassment or abusive behaviors, preferential treatment, regulation violations, fraud, and other illegal activities and unethical practices. These can be things that the employee witnesses or observe or even experienced. And then they go to their employer and say, hey, this isn't okay. You know, I don't feel comfortable. And then they either get fired or some sort of other adverse action is taken against them. And then next is discrimination. Here's the lowdown. So a company cannot decide to hire, promote, transfer, or fire you if it takes into account anything other than your qualifications and your ability to do the job. So if they base the decision on any other factor, which the factors under FEHA are age, religion, disability, marital status, medical condition, national origin, race or color, sex or gender, pregnancy, and sexual orientation, then that is considered discrimination and they're breaking a California state law. So it can take many forms. There's harassment, wage discrimination, gender discrimination, like glass ceilings. They're all prohibited by FEHA. For discrimination, this means you can't be paid less than a coworker or be passed over from a promotion based on race, gender, or another non-work related factor. If you're equally qualified and have equal experience, you should get equal pay and the same opportunities. It is difficult to prove, and we talked about that in the prior episode, and there's three types of evidence that you can bring in to prove discrimination. So there's direct evidence, circumstantial evidence, and then evidence of pattern and practice. So it's when an employer has engaged in consistent discriminatory behavior against multiple applicants or employees, and you start to see that they're doing it towards maybe a certain race or a certain age or the women instead of the men. So that is a way you can prove discrimination. However, let's say your employer says that another reason for your firing was because you just didn't perform well, which is a defense that we've been talking about a lot, especially when we've been asked about Leah's lawsuit. And now this one, like maybe she just wasn't a good cast member. So what she would then have to do is disprove their defense by saying, actually, no, the reason was because of my race or my gender. That stated reason is inaccurate and it could not have formed a reasonable justification for your firing. Like, there's no way my performance was bad. Look how many people liked me, or look at all the storylines I created. You could just bring in evidence that directly contradicts the evidence that the employer is bringing. So that's all things that would have to come out during discovery. So we'll see if anyone's able to survive the motion to dismiss, especially with the statute of limitations issue there. So that's discrimination. The last thing she's suing for, and she's suing for these under different California statutes, so it's hostile work environment. And under that, you have to allege facts demonstrating that he or she is a member of a protected class, and that's that long list of things that I read. He or she was subject to unwelcome acts, comments, or physical conduct because of the protected characteristics. So here would be because of faith's race. Such conduct was sufficiently severe or pervasive to alter the conditions of employment and to create an objectively abusive environment. That he or she perceived the conduct abusive, so that Faith herself thought it was abusive conduct. That he or she exhausted all of their administrative remedies, and that the defendant is liable under the principles of respondeat superior, which is just saying that the employer is liable for the actions of an agent.
Just a comment on that. Ceci and I briefly touched on this, but it's going to be one of the unique situations. Reality TV is a popularity contest, and then the producers and the network really get to decide what clips are shown and whatnot. But also, if the evidence is that the cast members treated a lot of people the way Faith is alleging, and it didn't really matter what color they were or what religion they were or whatever else, it might be more difficult to prove. But here, it looks like Faith is alleging some specific racial slurs. So it's going to be interesting to see how that comes out if this survives a motion to dismiss. But we've watched the girls, even this season, gang up on people and make them cry and feel terrible.
Yeah, I think just everyone on this show is awful. They all create a hostile work environment, but it might not be because of anyone's membership to a protected class. I think it's just, they're all awful people.
I mean, that's part of what makes good TV and what makes this difficult is that when you think of a hostile work environment, part of what makes for good TV, meaning entertaining TV, is people being put in uncomfortable or unpleasant situations. So it makes this type of claim, I think, even more difficult than it is normally.
So moving on to the contract, right?
Yes. We have an earlier episode that we did where we were able to get court records of a Southern Charm appearance release. And it was executed about the same time that Faith signed hers that she discusses in the complaint that we read in the last episode. Again, we don't know that this is the same agreement because she didn't attach it to her complaint. But from the wording and the way the appearance releases, Ceci, how many did she sign? Three? There's three. Mm-hmm. Yeah, at least three separate times she signed a contract. From the way it's described, there are portions of this contract that sound like it's very similar. And it's titled Appearance Release, Voluntary Participation, and Arbitration Agreement. Didn't Faith refer to it as she was a volunteer? Yeah. So this is appearance release, voluntary participation, and arbitration agreement. So Ceci, I think we...
Is this the same one we did in our episode?
I went in more in depth with this one than when, actually even than when we talked on the episode, I think. But they actually took a picture of him, the person that signed this, holding it with his signature on it. So there's no way for him to say it's even a different release. Yeah, lawyer side of me, smart move on production's part. I'll read paragraph one, and then says if you read paragraph two, and then we can talk about some of the other paragraphs. So the very first paragraph says, I irrevocably grant to producer the right to record and photograph me and to use my name, likeness, voice, information, or comments about me and any material that I contribute, collectively the materials, in connection with the program and other productions. I further grant to producer and any programming service or other platform of NBC Universal Media LLC network and its advertisers the right to use the materials throughout the universe in perpetuity in any and all media now known and hereafter devised in any manner, including in connection with advertising, merchandising, and publicity for the program. That's a lot.
Yeah, like we talked about in that episode. Yeah, you're sending away everything. I agree that producers shall own all of the rights to the materials and that the materials will be a work for hire by me for producer. I sign and transfer any rights, including copyright, I may have in the materials to producer.
I waive any right to object to any use, including any editing, dubbing, fictionalization of the materials by producer or network for any reason. So next, you have to warrant that you are mentally, physically, and emotionally able to participate in the program. There's a paragraph where you say you're not a candidate for public office, but that really has more to do with avoiding campaign advertising and financing laws as opposed to anything else.
So paragraph six is interesting when thinking about this case. It says, I will not be paid for any and all of the rights listed in this agreement and waive any right I may have to any compensation. I acknowledge and agree that a significant element of the consideration I am receiving under this agreement is the opportunity for publicity that I will receive if producer includes me in the materials, in the program, or in the promotions. I agree that I am a volunteer and not an employee of producer.
Oh, yeah.
Wait.
Yeah.
And I am not entitled to any employment benefits. Producer has no obligation to me and is under no obligation to use the materials. If I receive anything of value in connection with the program, I shall be responsible for all taxes and other obligations that arise.
We've already read several paragraphs where you're giving up any rights you may have, any copyright, any royalties, and then you explicitly agree in paragraph six that you will not be paid and that you will be a volunteer, which is what Faith talked about in her complaint that we read in the last episode.
But a volunteer and not an employee.
Yeah.
So how can you sue your quote unquote employer under California employment law when they're not your employer and you sign this agreement that says you're a volunteer?
Right. So they're going to have to argue that this whole provision is unconscionable. And then I think you brought up a good point last time, Ceci, because I think you said in California, you can't legally waive your rights to this.
Yeah, I don't think we talked about that. Let me pull up this little civil rights department handout. Under an employment agreement in California, it cannot prohibit an employee from talking about discrimination, harassment, retaliation, or other unlawful acts at work. An employment agreement cannot include language requiring a job applicant or employee to give up claims or rights in exchange for employment or an employment benefit. So yeah, I think in California, you can't waive your right to bring these sort of discrimination and employment.
But what
claims.
If you're not an employee?
But maybe you can. Yeah, I think you can give up your right if you're not an employee.
Yeah, because I was like, but you said you thought it applied to independent contractors.
Yeah, FEHA applies to independent contractors.
They're saying this is a voluntary. It's a volunteer. Even that word, they're trying to say you're not getting paid. You're volunteering to do this. And supposedly, ostensibly, the consideration is the potential for publicity.
I get it. You know, it's like having someone in the background at a restaurant sign a release. But her role was more than someone in the background. I guess for those who don't know the difference between an independent contractor and an employee, because we've been talking about that a lot, this is my unofficial way of explaining it. An independent contractor is someone who sort of sets their own schedule, is kind of in and out. I like to think of it as like a personal trainer or a cleaner that comes by versus someone who's on your salary and has to work set hours.
And if you just Google criteria for independent contractor versus employee, this gets litigated a lot in tax issues. You don't have to pay employment taxes on independent contractors, but you do have to pay employment taxes on employees. So independent contractors have a self-employment tax. It makes them a lot cheaper to hire because you're not responsible in that way for them for the taxes. Anyway, I just noticed this also says, furthermore, I shall not mention or plug any product, service, venture, or thing on the program without approval of the producer and or network. So not only are you not getting paid and ostensibly volunteering, you can't get any other sort of benefit from appearing unless the producer or and or network agree. And then it also says, I shall not participate in any unscripted reality-based program from the date of this agreement through 6 months after the date of the initial exhibition of the final episode of the last cycle in which I participated, which sounds like lawyer language for until the last episode airs of the last season I was on, until 6 months after that, I will not agree to be on another reality show.
I don't feel like they can uphold that.
I don't know.
That one feels a little, yeah.
And then, Ceci, do you want to read number 8 or paragraph 8?
I think we focused on this one a lot in that prior episode. So I understand that I or other parties may communicate private, factual, or fictional information about myself that I might find humiliating or embarrassing, or that is defamatory, disparaging, or unfavorable, and that the depiction of such information may portray me in a false light. I consent to the inclusion of this information in the program and the exploitation of the materials, even to the extent such inclusion might otherwise constitute an actionable tort.
So, Ceci, in plain language, what is that paragraph saying?
Well, yeah, I mean, like we talked about before, you're signing away your right. They can just lie about you straight up, make stuff up. And you have no right. You can't sue them for defamation, slander, nothing.
Taking it even further in paragraph 9, it says, for dramatic or creative purposes, producer and network may make misrepresentations to me related to any and all topics prior to and during the course of my participation. I consent to and assume all risks of such acts and omissions, regardless of whether they may infringe upon my rights or give rise to a claim. So not only are you agreeing that they can lie about you, in paragraph 8, you're agreeing that they can lie to you both before and during your participation. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then you have to agree that if requested by the producer that you'll execute a location agreement that grants the producer and network the right without limitation to enter upon and use my home for the purpose of photographing, filming, and recording the program. And if requested by producer, I agree to use reasonable good faith efforts to assist producer in obtaining appearance releases from my family, friends, employees, and any other individuals in my life in connection with the program. Paragraph 11 is also interesting if you want to read that.
Yeah. So you consent to the producer network recording my actions and statements via concealed or hidden cameras and audio devices throughout the filming locations, including in areas in which a person might have a reasonable expectation of privacy.
Essentially, paragraphs 1 through 11 are everything you're giving up and giving to the producers and network. And then it moves on to a section called confidentiality and publicity, which you are granting entirely to the network. I think these came up pretty heavily in Faith's complaint, talking about how she wasn't allowed to say anything or felt like she couldn't speak to anyone.
Which she might be breaching. Yeah. So it says, I shall not disclose any information or materials about producer, the network, this agreement, the program, its participants, locations, events, and outcomes that I learned from my program participation, collectively the confidential information, unless such confidential information is specifically disclosed in the program exhibition, if ever. My confidentiality obligations shall continue in perpetuity or until terminated by network in writing. That's a lot.
That's a lot. And then it says, except as requested by producer or network, I shall not, nor shall anyone on my behalf, discuss with any third party the program, my participation in the program, or make negative statements about or otherwise disparage any of the release parties as defined in paragraph 17, except that I may make incidental, non-derogatory mention that I participated in the program, i.e., I was on Southern Charm, for example, because that's what this is from. Only after network has announced or exhibited my appearance in the program or a news cycle or advertise, promote, or make commercial use of either my program participation or any of producers or networks' names, logos, trade names, or trademarks. That one seems not as bad as some of the other ones to me, just because they're saying you can't give spoilers, but it also says you can't make any mm-hmm. negative statements or otherwise disparage any of the release parties. Okay, so the next one.
Yeah, so I want to go ahead. To the non-disparagement. Just pointing out again that in California, if there's an employment agreement that contains a non-disparagement clause, it can't stop the employee from speaking about discrimination, harassment, retaliation, or other unlawful acts. So if it contains that, it has to state the following or something substantially similar. It has to say, quote, nothing in this agreement prevents you from discussing or disclosing information about unlawful acts in the workplace, such as harassment or discrimination or any other conduct that you have a reason to believe is unlawful. If a non-disparagement clause in an employment agreement violates these rules, the clause is unlawful and unenforceable, and the employer violates the Fair Employment and Housing Act, so FEHA.
And so Ceci is not reading that from this release. She's reading it directly from the website that has these laws on it. And the way that they're trying to get around this, again, is by calling this a volunteer participation form. So they're trying to circumvent the whole debate by saying this is just a voluntary participation form and you're a volunteer and you're volunteering these things.
It says, any breach by me of any of these confidentiality and publicity provisions would cause producer and network irreparable injury and damage that cannot be reasonably or adequately compensated by damages in any action at law. I agree that producer and network will be entitled to injunctive and other equitable relief to prevent or cure any such breach or threatened breach. I also recognize that proof of damages for any such breach will be costly, difficult, and inconvenient to ascertain. Accordingly, I agree to pay producer and network the sum of $500,000 per breach, plus disgorgement of any income that I may receive in connection with any such breach as liquidated damages.
So that's, I mean...
But those don't get upheld often.
They don't get upheld often, but if you're not a lawyer, you wouldn't know that.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Legal team, have you guys been on Quince's website recently? I shopped on there like 3 years ago for the first time and bought myself a bunch of cashmere sweaters. I lived in the black cashmere sweater, lived in it. And I hadn't shopped on there for a while because my cashmere sweaters lasted for a really long time. But I decided to go back on there and oh my gosh, have they completely expanded everything that they offer. The workwear, they have washable silk. And I mean, it's so affordable. I also shared with you all that I'm recently engaged and I'm in the middle of wedding planning. So anytime I'm shopping, I'm thinking about wedding. And they have everything I need for the wedding. I just booked my honeymoon. We're going to go to Southeast Asia. It's going to be hot there. And I've been looking for good linen pieces. Guess what? Quince has good linen pieces and they start at only $30. Then I'm like, okay, we need to get our wedding bands. You know who has fine jewelry now? 14 karat gold, Quince. So I send the link to Avery and I'm like, you have to get your wedding band from here. It's affordable and it looks just like any other wedding band. I mean, it looks great. Another thing I'm doing, again, I have a wedding on the brain. I want to look my best. So I'm like, okay, I really want cute little matching sets to go work out in. It's the only way I can get motivated. I have to like wear a cute little matching set. I've gotten really into Pilates and guess what? Quince has the matching sets. They look identical to matching sets I've already purchased from another sports brand. They have the same thing and at a fraction of the cost. I was able to get two tops and one pair of pants for the same price that I could only get one set at this other sportswear place. I mean, come on. Quince is just killing it. If you've shopped there before, it's time to go back on again. They have just completely expanded the categories of goods that they have to offer. They're not just all about cashmere sweaters anymore. They have got a ton of stuff, and I highly recommend you go check it out. If you're ready to go try out Quince, go to quince.com/docket to get free shipping and 365-day returns. That is quince.com/docket. to get free shipping and 365-day returns. That is an amazing guarantee on their goods. So go check it out. I highly recommend it, guys.
Right?
True.
I mean, if you're willing to sign this and be on a show and you don't have an agent and you are, you know, a struggling wannabe whatever in LA, that would be very scary. $500,000 per breach plus disgorgement of any income. So if you sold a story to the Sun or some other
Radar Online.
If you sold a story to Radar Online, that's what I was looking for, and got paid for it, then not only would you have to pay all that back, according to this, if it was upheld, you'd also owe $500,000 per breach. So if you disclosed more than one thing, they would say, oh, you breached it more than once, so you owe us $1.5 million. Also, 13 is scary. Paragraph 13 says, I authorize producer and network to investigate, access, collect, and use for any purpose whatsoever information about me and any of the statements made by me in this agreement or otherwise in connection with my participation in the program. Additionally, any such information may be disclosed publicly, used, broadcast, distributed, advertised, promoted, or otherwise exploited as part of the program or otherwise. So one comment here, this is reminding me, when we were at BravoCon in Las Vegas and all the husbands were there, the house husbands, and we were talking to them. And was it Abe that I was talking to that said that the husbands don't get paid?
Yeah.
The husbands have to sign contracts, I'm assuming very similar to this, and they don't get paid. So they're probably categorized as volunteers or whatever, but the husbands are getting, you can kind of see why they're so annoyed about participating sometimes. It makes a lot of sense. You had to sign all these rights away because this is something your wife wanted to do, and then you're not getting paid for it, and then you're agreeing that essentially the network production can research you, bring up really embarrassing things, and do whatever you want, and your wife's getting paid, but you're not.
Well, they shouldn't have signed it.
I know. No, I'm not.
No, I know.
I know. I'm not arguing with that. If you don't want to do it, you shouldn't do it.
Yeah. I mean, but, and I mean, they are getting a lot of publicity. So that's something that he and everyone else had to weigh.
Right.
You know, he did get a platform to talk about his legal career. People are Googling his practice. So, I mean, how much is that worth for him? And like the New Jersey men, I don't know if they get paid yet.
They get paid. I asked him.
They get paid. Okay, yeah. But presumably they didn't at first, but yet they had enough of a public platform where they could go tour. So,
right.
You know, it's something that they have to weigh.
And I mean, there are people that have done it well, but if you don't have a strong marriage and you don't have full support from your spouse going on one of these shows, how that could easily become resentment when stuff about you gets on the show, because you have like to have Kelsey a certain Grammer. Level of optimism bias to even agree to do it at all, right? So when you're agreeing to go on the show and your wife is pressuring you into it and you're like, well, it'll make her happy, and she's saying it's not going to really have anything to do with me, and then all of a sudden one of the other housewives is clickety-clacking and digging up dirt and brings up stuff that you weren't expecting. A lot of men probably don't watch the shows either, so they really don't know what they're getting themselves into.
I bet Harry Hamlin only signed a release to go on a couple episodes.
Yeah. He has an agent and he's sophisticated in the business, so he would know. And he was always portrayed actually really well on the show, I thought.
Mm-mm.
Oh, what did he do that was bad?
I was thinking of Kim Richards. Let's talk about the husband.
Oh, don't talk about the husbands. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was just thinking like he probably did sign a release, but we only saw him so often. He's really not on the show like everyone else's husbands were.
Right.
So I think he only signed to appear on a couple episodes.
Right. Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, when Denise Richards was bringing Aaron around and how she was so much smarter about, we still have microphones on us. Just the difference between someone who knows.
He looked horrible.
Yeah.
Himself. Like,
I mean, he was a very attractive man, but he, whenever he spoke, it was not. It's like, stop talking.
I did not find him attractive. Mm-mm.
Before he talked, I thought he was very attractive.
No.
Oh. He's not Ceci's type. So it does say in paragraph 14 that the participant, the so-called volunteer participant, agrees not to infringe upon or violate the rights of any other person or entity, nor to cause or threaten injury or harm to any person or property, that I shall abide by all applicable laws, rules, and regulations. I agree that producer has the right, but not the obligation, to use the means it deems necessary to preserve order and safety of myself and other participants. I acknowledge and accept all risks to my person or property arising from my participation in the program, including those arising from my interactions with other participants in the course of my participation with the program. So you're basically saying, I agree that I won't break any laws, threaten anyone, cause harm or injury to anybody or their property, but also that if someone else does that to me, I can't do anything about it. And that producer has the right, but not the obligation, to use the means it deems necessary to preserve the order and safety of myself and others. You're saying, I agree the producer has the right to do this, but they don't have to and can let something go, which is, that's, yeah.
I understand and freely consent to participating in activities in connection with the program that may be hazardous, dangerous, and may expose me to physical, emotional, and mental stress or injury. I accept and assume any and all risks, hazards, and dangers, regardless of whether they are explicitly detailed in this agreement, and the waivers, releases, and indemnities that I have executed or may execute apply to all such risks, hazards, and dangers.
You agree that what you're doing might be dangerous. You're agreeing you're not getting paid for it. You're agreeing that they can lie to you. You're agreeing that they can misrepresent you. You're agreeing that they can research you. And you're agreeing that you're not going to promote anything without their permission, and that you're not going to sue anyone, and that there may be an unsafe situation, but the producer can stop it, but they don't have to. That's just, there's just a lot. And then this next one is bold and in caps for the title and underlined. And Ceci, do you want to read that one?
Limitations or warranties by producer. Producer has made no representations or warranties of any kind regarding my or others' qualifications, ability, or fitness to participate in the program. And the waivers, releases, and indemnities contained in this agreement and any other agreement that I have executed or may execute in the future related to the program expressly apply to my participation and or presence around any such activities or persons.
It's literally just a bunch of lawyer words, but you're agreeing that you haven't been promised anything at all. And then 17 is the release and agreement not to sue and indemnity. And indemnity means, what's the best way to explain that? Basically saying, if production gets sued, I will pay for the cost of that. To the maximum extent permitted by law, I, on behalf of myself and my heirs, executors, agents, successors, or assigns, basically, if you die, somebody wants to bring a wrongful death claim. So it would be your successors, heirs, and assigns. Agree to release from liability. Never sue. And I've never seen it spelled out that plainly. Never sue. And bring no proceedings of any kind against producer, network, and or their parents, subsidiaries, assignees, licensees, affiliates, or anyone associated with the program, release parties for any claims, actions, damages, losses, costs, expenses, or causes of action whatsoever in any way that relate to this agreement, my participation in the production of the program, or the creation, use, or exhibition of the materials or program or promotions, or any legal theory, including without limitation, failure to adequately compensate me, infliction of emotional distress, personal injury rights, rights of privacy and publicity, defamation and or false light, regardless of whether caused by the negligence or willful misconduct of the release parties, collectively the release claims. I will defend and indemnify the release parties from any release claims and any breach or alleged breach by me, including breaches by me of this paragraph 17 relating to this agreement. Okay, I said I wasn't going to read it, but I just read it really fast. I shall be liable for any attorney fees and costs incurred by the release parties in connection with any claim or lawsuit I may bring in violation of this agreement. So to a non-lawyer reading that after having signed it, you would definitely think that there is no chance you could sue anybody ever. I mean, if you were a layperson.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I feel bad for her. And I'm sure she didn't know, like she said in here in her complaint, she didn't realize until she met up with Bethany, who was like, no, these can still be shut down if you get a good lawyer. Here, use my lawyer.
You did make a really good point the last time, which I agreed with, Ceci, which was you sign one of these the first time with optimism bias and think it's going to work out. As a non-lawyer, you know, we can put ourselves in the shoes of a layperson and get that. We've all been young and we've all thought, oh, well, it'll be fine. Everything will work out. But continuing to sign these contracts, because even the ones where they get paid have similar language upon information and belief, that's we can surmise. It's tough if you've signed it more than once, continually ratified this sort of thing, and you've come back for more to make these claims.
True,
I think.
But even if it was just one, even though she signed it three times, I still think that she thought that this language meant she couldn't sue.
Yeah, no, and
regardless.
I agree with that too. And then paragraph 18 is an acknowledgement that the person signing it may discover facts or incur or suffer claims which were unknown or unsuspected at the time. And so basically saying, like, I may learn things that if I had known them before would have made me not sign that. I agree that by reason of this agreement and the releases contained in the preceding paragraphs, I am assuming any risk of such unsuspected facts or claims. They're trying to write legal language that the producers may know. We have all this dirt on you, but you don't know that they know that that's going to be brought up before you're asked to sign it. And you wouldn't have signed it if you would have known that they had known. So then there's a big mediation and arbitration clause, and we've discussed these before. And this is paragraph 19, and it's all in caps. It's all bold. It makes it very clear that you're agreeing to an arbitration clause. And then, Ceci, do you want to read the all caps, larger font, all bold, underline, final paragraph?
This is, I have had ample opportunity to read this entire agreement, had an opportunity to review this agreement with an attorney of my choice, and have in fact read this agreement. I understand that I am giving up legal rights in this agreement, including without limitation, my right to file in lawsuit or to bring a claim in connection with this agreement.
And I'll put a snapshot of this on our Insta stories when we publish this episode, but it says right above in the largest font on here, all bold, all caps, underlined, right above where you sign. So you can't sign this and say that you've didn't see the part about not being able to file.
Or giving up rights.
Yeah, and giving up rights. This contract that we just read that was from around the same time as when Faith would assign hers, but is again from a different production company. In support of the provisions in this contract, a producer from Southern Charm filed an affidavit. And I think Ceci and I should read part of this because you can see how a response might be from production and Faith's lawsuit if her lawsuit is able to continue. So one of the things that this gentleman was claiming was that production had influenced him to be on the show. And paragraph 6 of this affidavit just says that neither I nor any of the other producers had any discussions with this gentleman before he appeared for this dinner date on the show. So basically saying, like, they didn't influence him. It was his relationship with Catherine.
She says on October 30th, 2018, plaintiffs signed the appearance release, voluntary participation, and arbitration agreement without incident or any pressure from any defendant or anyone else. I do not recall providing any assurances to plaintiff about how he would or would not be portrayed on Southern Charm, and I am unaware of any producer giving him any such assurances. The producers of Southern Charm do not typically provide such assurances to volunteer participants. The appearance release, voluntary participation, and arbitration agreement was handed to plaintiff. Turn to the first page. It would have been highly unusual to hand such an agreement to a potential participant. Turn to any other page. And I do not recall ever having done so.
So part of his thing, and you can go back and listen to our previous episode. We'll probably put the title of it in the description of this episode so you can go back and listen. But he tried to claim that it was he was pressured and rushed and that they only showed him one page of the contract. It didn't show him the whole thing and that he just signed it. But I have to say, in this photograph of him smiling, holding it, he doesn't look like he has been in any way rushed. So paragraph 9, she says, plaintiff had adequate time to review the appearance release, voluntary participation, and arbitration agreement, and took time to review each page before he signed it. He asked about the provision in paragraph 5 of the appearance release, voluntary participation and arbitration agreement, and lawyer note. Notice how they're, you know, saying those words over and over again to kind of try to cement that in the judge's head.
Plaintiff did not question any other provisions in the appearance release, voluntary participation and arbitration agreement. Had he raised any other issue, it would have been flagged and addressed prior to filming.
And so this is one thing Ceci and I mentioned in the last episode, which it says, if plaintiff had declined to sign the appearance release, voluntary participation and arbitration agreement, his dinner date with Catherine Dennis simply would not have been filmed. So essentially saying, look, we just wouldn't have filmed it. If you listen to this past episode, we talk about this, but he talks about how he felt like Catherine would somehow be punished. And there were all these, he walked in and there was all of these cameras there, production was there, everything was all set up, and that he wasn't presented with the appearance release until then, until that time. So he didn't have a chance to look, he claims he didn't have a chance to look it over before, and that he would be putting Catherine's job on the show in danger if he refused to do it, and the show had used all that money and time and whatever to get those people there. Which I understand feeling pressured, but again, he's a grown man.
Yeah, and like we said in that episode, that there was the language that was bolded appeared on that last page. Even if he had just read that,
right,
that probably would have been enough to give any reasonable person pause before signing it. So I didn't see his argument to be very persuasive.
No.
But moving on.
Yeah, like we said, attached to this affidavit as Exhibit A is a photograph taken of plaintiff immediately after signing the appearance release, voluntary participation in arbitration agreement. The producers of Southern Charm routinely photograph participants immediately after they sign an appearance agreement so that they can readily identify participants later if needed. Which, you know, that's not really why, because they have them on film, so they can identify them.
Yeah.
So the next thing that Ceci and I want to talk about is an order. This is a different lawsuit from Southern Charm. This was actually a lawsuit filed by T-Rav, as he's known, Thomas Ravenel's nanny. Just to preface this, we've gotten a lot of requests to cover that, to cover all of the Southern Charm T-Rav lawsuit issues, and we've been very hesitant to do it. One, we just really dislike him in general, but two, there's a lot of stuff with the children involved, and I do think we should cover it at some point, but there's a lot of stuff we can't access and quite frankly shouldn't be able to access because there's minors involved in this. So this is a lawsuit, and this was filed in federal court, and this is Exhibit 7, and it's got a discussion, and it's an order and opinion. And it has a discussion of what the court, the federal judge, agreed to uphold in a very similar contract. And so we thought, this is the only case I know of where these have been upheld. And it's fairly recent. It's from 2020. So we're going to read some of this and discuss it. The thing that I thought was the most interesting about this order was something Ceci and I have talked about many times, which is, what is the consideration for these contracts? And Ceci, you've taken the bar exam much more recently than I have and passed it. But so please jump in and correct me and fill in where needed, because it's been a while. But, you know, you learn I think probably your first year of law school, a contract is offer, acceptance, and consideration. And that means someone makes an offer in exchange for whatever the consideration is, you accept, and then it becomes a binding contract. And one of the things Ceci and I have discussed is this person, whoever's signing one of these voluntary participation things, is giving up so much for the chance of receiving publicity. There's no guarantee. So like, what is the actual consideration? But we've also talked about how you don't have to go on a show and you don't have a right to be on a show. So giving this stuff up for the opportunity to potentially be included is kind of a fun legal thing to talk about in the abstract. But here, it has affected real people's lives and they've filed lawsuits over it.
So just to add on to what you were saying, consideration is a bargain for exchange. So it's a promise and performance. So there has to be a give and a take in every contract or else it is not a valid contract.
But I mean, the whole semantics of saying I'm contracting to be a volunteer, it's just an interesting sort of thought experiment because it has to be a valid contract for any of that to be enforceable. The consideration is a possibility of something. And I'm willing to give this.
I guess it's being filmed on a TV show, even if it's not used.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they're saying like, that's what I'm saying. Like the consideration is the potential for something to happen, which to me makes it, it's like.
But the filming happens.
Yeah, the filming happens. Yeah.
It's the airing that's the potential, but the filming happens.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is thinking like a lawyer.
Yeah, that like the camera, because you were saying like the cameras are all set up and stuff.
Perfect I was just thinking example. Of thinking like a lawyer. That is perfection.
Because you were saying like the camera, he got there and the cameras are all set up. So yeah, like they expend film on this person and resources and time. And he gets to be on the film. And he also expends his time. So I think that's a bargain for exchange.
But in the grand scheme of things, what you give up in exchange for, like I love the example of from The Little Mermaid, the contract of, is that a valid contract where Ariel gives up her voice in exchange for human legs?
I guess like, see, I haven't delved into this enough. Can courts step in and say whether some consideration is enough?
Yeah, it's complicated, right? Anyway, let's talk about what the court says about this particular provision, and then we can talk about it more because it's a fascinating topic. So this is from the court order. And again, this is from a different lawsuit in federal court. Federal judge, and it says, plaintiff's argument that the agreements are unsupported by a lack of consideration is unconvincing. The agreements do not lack consideration because the mutual promise to arbitrate constitutes sufficient consideration. Furthermore, both agreements state that, quote, I acknowledge and agree that a significant element of this consideration I am receiving under this agreement is the opportunity for publicity that I will receive if producer includes the footage and materials in the program or advertisements. As one court reasoned, plaintiff signed on to participate in a television show and bargained for the chance of publicity. And that's from a Supreme Court case from 2013. And that was upholding a release barring a plaintiff from suing a television producer for defamation in exchange for plaintiff's appearance on a reality television show.
By extension, plaintiff's contention that she needed new and additional consideration to support the agreements is confounding. Before signing the agreements, plaintiff had no contracts with defendants. Therefore, to enter into the 2014 agreement, plaintiff would not need new and additional consideration. The fact that plaintiff worked for Ravenel as a nanny prior to her appearances on Southern Charm is irrelevant. I don't think that's the same situation.
No, this is not the same situation. However, imagine if you already have a job that you really like working for somebody, and then unbeknownst to you, they sign on to appear on a reality television show, and they're getting paid for being on the show. And because of your job as a nanny or whatever, you are then included in the show just from being around. And so in order for you to continue doing the job that you actually get paid for, you have to assign this release. And so then I can understand more of this is not the same situation as Faith at all, but I understand more of like her duress argument saying like, well, I wanted to keep my job. This is my only source of income. And he decided to be on the show. So I felt like I had to sign it. To me, that makes the judge didn't like the argument, but I can see where that's coming from.
Mm-hmm. I get it. I just didn't really need her on the show.
Right. And then here it says Plaintiff also claims she signed the agreements under duress. However, the 2015 agreement states, and this again is very similar to, it seems like, what Faith has said, plaintiff acknowledges she had ample opportunity to read and thus has in fact read the entire agreement, and that I understand I am giving up certain legal rights under this agreement, including without limitation, my right to file a lawsuit in court with respect to any claim arising in connection with this agreement. And the court in its order points out that, as Ceci and I did, that that was in bold and capitalized and underlined in the original.
Plaintiff has not presented any non-conclusory allegations or evidence that she did not have the opportunity to read or review the document, or that defendants pressured plaintiff to sign the agreements. Plaintiff's assertions that the frequency of filming and my schedule as a nanny for Ravenel made my appearance on Southern Charm almost inevitable, and that crew for Southern Charm approached me on two separate occasions about appearing on the television show and requesting my consent do not come close to constituting duress. And here's an example or a citation. No duress absent improper external pressure or influence that practically destroys the free agency of a party. That's duress.
So the plaintiff in this case, which was Ravenel's nanny, also argued that the agreements were unconscionable.
Yeah, I think she just argued unconscionability based on lack of ability to get damages. And then the court's just saying, well, you did have ability to get damages. But I just don't think that that's something Faith would argue.
Right, right.
I wish it was more about the substance of it. But again, we're working with what we've got.
So the conclusion by the court was that defendants Haymaker Media, Bravo Media Productions, NBC Universal Media, and Comcast Corporation are required to arbitrate their disputes, and that all claims against defendants Haymaker Media, Bravo Media Productions LLC, NBC Universal Media, and Comcast Corporation are dismissed without prejudice. Claims got dismissed, and it was dismissed without prejudice, which is interesting. But like I said, we may get into some more details of that complaint if we decide to cover some of the TRAV legal issues.
Right.
So
then ending with Faith's podcast. So yeah, she started a Faith podcast. She started a podcast recently where she said she was going to talk about her lawsuits. So we'll play that audio or a clip of that. I just read a summary of her podcast and people were like, well, it's more of a gossip, like a celebrity gossip podcast where they recap celebrity gossip, and that what she said about the lawsuit was very limited. And I have a feeling what we're playing is probably the extent of it, which is for the best. But I think what she did was like hooked everyone into listening to the podcast by being like, I'm going to talk about the case, but like, you can't talk about your case. So anyway, we'll play that clip.
We're terrified because when I found out they would call the police on me, mm-hmm. I was terrified. I still need to go to therapy for it. I thought I was going to be gone.
Imagine the cops running up on you with a picture saying, this is you, and now we're arresting you and taking you to prison.
Yeah.
Just because somebody called the cops on you. That is insane.
Yeah.
This was a 50-year-old man named Jax and the Annie Ann's Pretzel Girls calling the police on people just because they should really be in jail. I feel like they should be like,
you know what?
Why are they not in jail?
I reached out. There was a there's a man, Robbie, a very big on TikTok, has a really big following, over 3 million followers on TikTok. Shout out to Robbie. He's doing a lot of justice reform in New York right now. Which is good. They're piggybacking off of the governor, their latest governor, who was pretty much saying he was wanting to put a law into place that says if you falsely accused people of crimes, you deserve to go to prison. I stand behind that fully. Fully.
There's an actual law in California. You cannot make a false police report. You can't just call the cops and say this happened knowing that it didn't happen and act like it's true. That's a literal crime.
I think there needs to be justice reform for sure. Right. I think somebody definitely needs to look into that. And if I have to be that somebody, well, here I come.
I'm going to ask you a question about that. Because those two or three, was it all three of them were fired or just two?
There was one that, quote unquote, walked away before they were fired. Okay. So it looks like, you know,
good,
they put the letter.
Great public relations.
Yeah.
So, but it was two of them. It was Stassi and Kristen.
Yeah.
Were allegedly, they left the show. We just say they left the show.
They were fired.
They were fired. Okay. And then they were brought back to another show called The Valley.
Kristen and Jax was.
Kristen and Jack. So where is Stassi right now? Pregnant?
I have no idea.
Is she pregnant?
I don't know.
Lala's pregnant.
I've heard.
Okay. I know one of them are pregnant.
I've heard Lala was, but I don't know about Stassi. I haven't looked into Stassi. I haven't had any motivation to look into that young lady's life.
Okay.
But I will say that them bringing them back on The Valley was shocking. I mean, the heartfelt You know what? Due to my attorneys, I can't even get into that.
Yeah.
But the statement that were put out, I thought was sincere. And to be completely backdoored and just...
Backdoored is crazy.
I probably shouldn't say backdoored.
No.
Okay.
You set yourself up for that one.
I did.
Yeah.
Okay. I won't say it no more.
All right.
I shouldn't talk about that.
You know what? We're not. And so I'm glad that you got to clear the air.
Yeah.
We're moving on from Vanderpump.
I was a little bit curious on what the law is in California and if making a false police report is punishable as a crime, and it is. So in California, if you make a false 911 call, that's charged as a misdemeanor if the person who makes the call knows that the report is false. So that punishment is up to 1 year and or a $1,000 fine. If the person who makes the call not only knows that the report is false, but either knows or should know that the emergency response is likely to result in great bodily injury or death, and this result does occur, then it will be charged as a felony. The punishment for a felony is up to 3 years in county jail and or a $10,000 fine, and you could also be charged for the cost of the emergency response. I feel like what happened here was in between making a false police report and what I think of as swatting. That's the first thing I think about when I think about someone calling emergency services and then it ending up in great bodily injury. That seems to be like it was a trend that picked up in the past 10 years. I think maybe with video games and maybe streaming, people are targeting others that they don't know or even do know with SWAT teams, which is just horrific and horrifying. Horrifying. No one should be ever doing that.
Well, thanks, legal team. We hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll keep you posted if there's further developments.
Yep. Until next time. Bye.
Bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
The Bravo Docket is part of the Acast Creator Network.